Just a brief introduction to what's going to happen next. It's going to be a music video that I came across that's really appropriate for what we're doing today. But it's truly remarkable because at the time that this was put together, it was sung by a 10-year-old girl by the name of Sofia Avocado. I hope you enjoy it.
Daddy's rich, and your mama's good looking. So hush, little baby, don't you cry.
You enjoyed it as much as I did. I think it was just truly lifting and delightful. So I have something else to share with you to take us into the talk, a little video that I think is on topic. And I hope you enjoy this as well.
Hiya, Johnson. You're just the guy I want to see. This is perfect.
Well, I'm very busy.
I have noticed, Mr. Johnson, that you're a very nervous guy. You know, you just can't calm yourself. Every time you come up here to speak to me, you get upset and nervous. Well, pal, I got the greatest cure for aggravation that was ever invented.
Well, Mr. Cranmer,
it'll only take a minute. It might change your entire life. Now, look, if you ever get nervous, see, and you're aggravated, all you have to do is say, pins and needles, needles and pins, it's a happy man that grins. Then you put on a big smile, and you say to yourself, what am I mad about? And believe me, you won't be able to remember what you're mad about. I just wish I had something to aggravate me right now to show you how it works.
AR off, maybe this will do the trick.
All right, a little test.
Pins and needles, needles and pins. It's a happy man that grins.
Look, see, boy, it's working like a charm. Look at a nice spot. How nice it's got. Good.
Now, what am I mad about?
They raised the rent 15%.
Needles and pins. It's a happy man that
pins. Hey, that house, Mr. Johnson, there's a perfect example how this pins and needles thing works. He fought a battle with himself. He fought this battle and he won the battle. Now he's going to go in there for a few seconds and he'll think it over, get calm, cool, and collected. And then a couple of seconds, he's going to come out here refreshed with a new lookout on life. Now, what do you see now? One, two.
You are not going to get a dime. Not one thin dime are you going to get.
Pins and needles.
Ah, shut up.
You've got something.
some crush, Johnson. Some crush coming up here trying to raise our rent. You should be lowering our rent.
Just a minute, Mr. Cramden. The rent commission just didn't give me this. I had to prove hardship.
Prove hardship? What did you use for evidence? A picture of this stump?
It is not worth...
I love the Honeymooners. I just think it is just a very short, brief, but classical time of American television that is worth revisiting from time to time. Well, here we are, the backstretch of August, sometimes referred to as the dog days of summer, although technically the dog days of summer occur earlier in the month. But nevertheless, it's warm and usually at this time of the year, very humid. The forecast for this coming week is that we again might return and have a couple of days of 90 plus degree temperatures with high humidity. And I know it's going to disappoint you that I don't have a joke to tell you, but I do have a couple of stories that are true and that I think are kind of humorous. And the first goes back to when I was a very young boy, maybe 10 to 12 years old, I don't remember. We lived in the city on the very near northwest side. And that year, summer was brutal. There were extended days of high temperatures and high humidity. And so to try to gain some relief, people in the neighborhood would get a hold of a wrench and open up the fire hydrants. And this is exactly what happened one night. And my father, who was looking for a bit of comfort and just wanted to soak his feet in the cool water coming out from the fire hydrant for a few minutes, took off his shoes and his socks, and he placed them on a window ledge of the apartment that was right there by the fire hydrant. Well, the person living in the apartment came out and took issue with those shoes and socks being there, so he picked up my father's shoes and socks and tossed them into the water. Well, Dad already had a short fuse because of the heat, and so as you might guess, he did not react kindly, and the battle was on. The next thing I know, the police showed up. Dad's anger was still flaring, and so he was arrested and given a seat in the patrol wagon, which caused my eldest sister, Shirley, who was probably about 20, 22 years old at the time, to react to her father getting arrested and screamed and yelled and got right into the face of one of the police officers, who calmly said to her, "You must love your father an awful lot because you are just like him. So get into the wagon and join him." Yep, the two of them were arrested. The second story also is kind of related to fire hydrants. During my school years, I would work a summer job. And one day in this really hot summer, I spent the entire day on a 40-foot trailer unloading bundles of leather, many of which exceeded 50 pounds. By the end of the day, I was soaked head to toe with perspiration. I could have wrung my socks out. There was no shower at work. There also was no shower in the apartment in which we lived. So I went to the bathroom and I took off my shirt to wash my face, my neck, and my arms. But the water pressure was very low because across the street, the fire hydrant was going full blast. And just as I finished soaping my arms and my hands and my face and my neck up, the water pressure went from slow to zero. And there I was, just covered with soap. And I was afraid to open my eyes because I might get soap in them and it would burn. So I just kind of felt and grabbed a towel and I rubbed it on my eyes to try to get rid of the soap. And then I just let out a howl. Now what am I supposed to do? And good old Mom, who never was too terrific at sympathizing, said, "Oh, for God's sake, there's all the water you need coming from the fire pump across the street. Go across and rinse yourself off," which is what I did. And as I share this story with you today, I can still feel the wonderful coolness of the water. And not only did I rinse the soap off, I got soaked in that soothing hot water again from head to toe. It's really kind of interesting how different people look at summertime and the hot temperatures from very different perspectives, especially as we near the end of August. For some, as winter begins to calm down, to wane, there's a feeling of sadness. The days grow shorter and the nights grow longer. There's this realization that it's time to close the book on all of those activities usually associated with summer. Outdoor cooking on the grill, going to the beach or to the pool, playing baseball, just tossing a frisbee around, going on picnics, maybe some summer concerts. For some, there actually is a soothing pleasure involved in basking, maybe even baking in the sun. And of course, all of these types of things are interrupted this year by the pandemic, which in a way makes things even sadder. At the same time, many others view this time of year very differently. For some, fall cannot get here soon enough. They've had it with the heat and the humidity, and they just long for those cooler days. And let me emphasize, there's nothing wrong with your thoughts or feelings towards summer, regardless of whether you dread the end of summer or you just want to celebrate it. That being said, I share with you that I personally love the sweltering heat and cherish the dog days of summer. I love it because going way back to when I was a small boy, every summer was magical. Today, I love it because I have come to regard it as a very special spiritual guidepost. For me, it has become an integral part of what I might call a spiritual circadian rhythm. It may no longer be true in these days where everything is air conditioned, but over the years, August was a time when so many things would come to a virtual stop. Without air conditioning, there was so little escape from the heat. I vividly remember many nights, long after the sun went down and the temperature just stayed well into the 80s, and the air was just so thick, you just didn't want to move. During a period of years during that time, our furniture had those dreaded plastic seat covers. Remember those? If you sat on them in the summertime wearing shorts, when you got up, it felt like you left a good chunk of your skin behind. And just the thought of having to go somewhere by foot or even by a car that did not have air conditioning was just absolutely dreadful. But it all served a purpose. That slight tilt of the earth that brought all of that hot weather was nature. Or I would argue that it was spirit, telling us it was time to pause. It was a time to give it a rest. It was time to seek out a bit of comfort under the shade of a tree. It was a time to see, to feel, and to know God in the form of even a warm, gentle breeze that might cool your palms. A hot August night to me is a special time. A hot August night is a sacred time. A hot August night is a holy time. The hot and humid summer days and nights are invitations to come to Sabbath. It also was a very special time of communion. When it wasn't so very hot or very cold for that matter, all of us in our family, we would go off in a different direction. We would all be off doing different things. But when the summer ovens were turned on, we just stayed together. We were home. And together, we felt that we were at home. And there was a time when neighbors would be outside sometimes as late as 11:30. Because it was just too warm to confine themselves to their apartments and to their houses. And so they were out and they shared and they became closer. They became better neighbors, more concerned about one another. And so in its own way, it was truly magical. It wasn't television that marginalized us in the eyes of one another. It was air conditioning. We are all creatures of cycles. Every year, this planet in which we live, you know, makes its journey 365 days around the sun. And every month, the moon, like clockwork, does its thing, appearing in the sky and then fading back away. And one of the richest, I think anyway, of where we happen to live is that we have four very distinct and very different seasons. And in the wintertime, we celebrate, we do Christmas and New Year's. In February, there's Valentine's Day. In the spring, we look forward to St. Patrick's Day and, of course, Easter. In May, things begin to warm up, and we celebrate Memorial Day and Mother's Day. Summer arrives, and we honor fathers, and we, on the 4th of July, we celebrate our independence. September rolls around, there's Labor Day. In October, we have ghosts and goblins and Halloween. And in November, it's my personal favorite, Thanksgiving. Each journey around the sun is a cycle, not just astronomically, but emotionally and psychologically. And because we are spiritual beings, we too flow in that cycle spiritually. And you probably have noticed when I was going through all of those months of the year and a holiday, there was a glaring hole. Because it's fascinating, there's one month in which there are no official holidays. And that month is August. This is the month that calls out to us to celebrate absolutely nothing. This is the month that calls out to us to become more keenly aware of the nothingness that is referred to so often in Buddhism. Now, during these dog days of summer, we rightfully pause. Now, when that summer sun reminds us, it is time to give it a rest. Now it's just a time to breathe. Now is the time to bless this time by doing not a gosh darn thing. Now is the time to absorb, to take in the presence of God in everything and in the nothingness. I really invite you to think of August as the month of Sabbath. Pauses, rest periods, times of empty spaces are so very important to our growth on all levels. I recall several years ago listening to a musician composer who was performing and also giving a talk at Unity Northwest, and she pointed out something really fascinating, that in music, those tiny spaces in between the notes were even more important than the notes themselves. And that without those little periods of rest, those little periods of nothingness, you really couldn't have music. You only would be able to have noise. I open with that Honeymooners video because I believe it was on point. Poor Ralph Cramden, at long last, thought he had hit upon a gimmick, a magic formula that would relieve him of all of his anger and frustration. Pins and needles, needles and pins, it's a happy man that grins. There was no magic in those words. It was simply a mantra designed to create a stop, a pause. a space that would allow him to ask the question, what am I angry? What am I upset about? Unfortunately for Ralph, but of course wonderfully entertaining for us, he just couldn't hang in there. He just couldn't overcome his own knee-jerk reactions, to which he was so entrenched. He really might have benefited from a few hot August nights. I think we could relate to that video in a way. All of us have had things happen to us, or we have things that happen to us regularly, consistently. We could just feel the emotion just start to boil up inside of us until we really just absolutely want to explode. And if we could just manage, whether it's through the use of a mantra or just taking a really deep breath and try to ask ourselves the question, is it what's going on around me that's causing this, or what is happening in me that is allowing me to come to a point of losing it or just about losing it? In Unity, we emphasize the importance of developing a regular prayerful practice, that there is value in developing a routine, a healthy habit of prayer. And there is value in doing this, without a doubt, because it establishes for us a foundation, a strong foothold that allows us to constantly rediscover who we are and what is ours to do, not just in a specific instance, but in general, with our lives. But there is a very slight difference between a daily habit, a routine, and a cycle. Spirit comes to us constantly, calling out to us, reminding us we are here for a reason, telling us that our very lives are part of a sacred contract. And so what I'm banging away with at this talk is that one of the provisions of that sacred contract is that you have to have times when you just give it a rest. Not because the clock has struck a certain hour, but just because you allow yourself to feel that the time is right. If you ever lived through even a small part of your life in which you were sleep deprived, you just were not getting enough sleep, it's very much what we're talking about. You lose concentration. You can't focus. You're miserable. And regardless of what you're doing, you're just not doing it 100%. You're just not getting it right. It's a horrible experience, one that threatens your health in serious ways, things that could lead to heart disease and hypertension and kidney malfunctioning and all sorts of other bad things. That sleep cycle is critical to your very existence. By the way, remember that, keep it in mind, because if my talks ever put you to sleep, well, you're welcome. We're all familiar with the passage from Ecclesiastes that tells us there's a time for everything under heaven. This tells of the spiritual cadence that is part of our very makeup. Just as we cannot get by without sleep for a protracted period of time, we cannot thrive spiritually if we never take a pause, if we never give it a rest. The difference shows up in our lives all of the time. Imagine looking at a rose and not being able to see it. Imagine being oblivious to the glorious chants of the cicadas that now fill our trees during this time in August every time, this time during the year. And think about how we cheat ourselves because we are so busy that we more or less treat random people that we come across, people that we meet, as objects and engage with them strictly on a transactional basis. Think of when we do that, how we never get the awesome twinkles, the stars in their eyes, or the Christ light that glows in each and every one of their hearts. a Christ light that we share with them, and we're just too uptight to celebrate it at that moment. There are numerous scripture passages and stories that deal with the importance of giving it a rest and pausing. Psalm 72 praises God with the words, "Yours is day, yours also is the night. You establish the stars and the sun. You have fixed all the bounds of the earth. You made summer and winter." And early on, we learn from the story, it was when Adam slept that God took one of his ribs and created Eve. And of course, the story is myth. You know, it didn't literally happen, but it makes the point that when we are giving it a rest, when we are in that restorative, replenishing state, is when we truly generate, you know, the energy that's involved in regeneration and the energy that's involved in reproduction. And in the Hebrew scriptures, in the book of Genesis, is a story of Jacob who goes up to Mount Haran, and he grows tired because the sun had begun to set, symbolizing that his awareness, his consciousness is fading. And so he goes to sleep and he dreams. And when he wakes up, he proclaims, "Truly, the Lord is in this place. Truly, this is a sacred place." Well, guess what, Jacob? It always had been a sacred place. But before he slept, before he became rejuvenated, he was just too tired to realize it. Our way shower Jesus launched his ministry first by doing the retreat and going off into the desert for 40 days. And I don't know if any of those 40 days overlapped with the month of August. But he filled his time by just taking it easy, by pausing, by relaxing, embracing the nothingness, and being about prayer. Our lives are enriched by everything that comes to us, by everything that we experience. This includes those lazy, crazy, hazy days of summer. It's our time now to make a sabbatical. And all we have to do is nothing, really. Just sit back, grow in our awareness of Spirit's love, and pray. If you don't allow yourself to get into the rhythm of life that includes doing nothing, you're so busy that when the miracles in your life come to you, you will end up sleeping right through them.